rifling through those long boxes.
It's gotta be here. Aha! Here it is!
And bagging those books.
I'm out of bags and boards again.
Welcome to your home for Star Wars comics.
The Cosmic Force Podcast.
A Youtini Podcast Network production.
And now, here are your hosts, Parker Kirk, Caleb Laminek, and Jacob Bosch.
Welcome everyone to The Cosmic Force, your weekly Star Wars comics podcast released every Wednesday on all your favorite podcasting platforms. Be sure to follow us and give us a review on one of those. Thanks everyone for tuning in this week. If you want to support the show, you can head on over to patreon.com/Youtini, where for as little as $5 a month, you can gain exclusive access to the entire Youtini podcast network of shows. But with that out of the way, let's jump into it. This week we're talking about Thrawn Alliance of the comic adaptation, issues 1 and mostly issue 2. So, Oz and Caleb, how are you doing this evening?
Excellent. You know, things are, you know, starting to shape up over here. We got a fun, well, we got an interesting comic to talk about. Like, there's a lot of action to it, you know, but it's definitely, you know, Thrawn Alliances was probably, I liked it more than a lot of other people, the book, so it's kind of weird, like, having read it, like, a year and a half ago, going back and doing this comic here. So, I'm excited to talk about this and kind of dig into some details here. Oz, how about yourself?
I am good. Outside of what we're about to discuss, I'm in Las Vegas at the moment. To anyone who thinks I'm a weirdo for stopping a Las Vegas trip to record a podcast, I am here for work, which is much different than being here for play. So I'm in my hotel room right now, and I'm not gambling, which is probably good for me. This is a better use of my time, financially speaking.
I know you're over in Texas usually. Is Vegas like something that it's more common to go to? Because like I've over here in the East Coast, I've known like a few people who've gone to Vegas, but it always seems like they only do it for like weed conventions.
Yeah, I'm here because I'm working. I build trade show booths, so there's a convention in town. I'm building a booth at it, and yeah, there's a lot of conventions here, and then a lot of people on this side of the country come. I mean, you know, if you live in California, it's like a quick flight or a 3-hour drive, whatever. I love this place. Weird being here for work, but it is what it is.
Well, we got some stuff to talk about, including what we're reading, and I'll kick it off, because this is actually Oz's fault. I blame him for my reading this past week, and that was the new Marvel Ultimate Universe comics. So I read, Ultimate Invasion, I think, was the 4-issue miniseries, and then Ultimate That's Universe correct. Was a one-shot. I'm on mm-hmm. the Marvel Unlimited 3-month delay, so I've not gotten to the kind of Spider-Man, X-Men, and all that kind of stuff that's launching right now. But it was good. It was very good. I have, like, a passing, like, understanding of who the maker is, so that kind of helped. But I really haven't ever dug into like a extended amount of Marvel superhero comics reading. I've read all of Civil War, for better or worse, and yeah, so I don't know, it's been fun to kind of get into that. I'm you know, excited to read more of that. And since I'm not, like, as a diehard with that as I am, like, with Star Wars, I'm okay with it being on a delay.
Yeah, for sure, man. Welcome to the club. If anyone wants an Ultimate Universe guide, whether the new one or the old one, I will walk you through all 700 or so issues. I think, if I remember right, that's how much it is. That's my first love in comics, was that. I have not been reading much comics. If y'all will remember, last week I said I started Dune try and read it before the second film came out. I am extremely happy to officially announce I have read almost 35 pages of that book.
There you go.
So I am really.
So you're not even on Dune yet. So you're not even on the practice.
Yeah, no. I really enjoy it. It's just, I'm in Las Vegas, and sometimes you overestimate how much time you're going to spend reading while you're in Las Vegas.
You know, and if you're already in a blasted, you know, inhospitable hellscape of a desert, maybe you should be reading a book about it, too.
Yeah, I just look out the window. Oh, hey, it's Arrakis. So I am going to go see that in a couple days, and I'll have the book spoiled for me, but that's fine. I've also been, Star Wars side of things, listening to Dark Disciple. Some of our listeners may have checked out the Bad Batch was last week, and we, well, depending on, I don't know when this episode airs, but Bad Batch came out about a week ago.
The Bad Batch came out for you guys 2 weeks ago now.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, you know, there's a certain character coming back in Bad Batch. It's Asajj Ventress. She was in the trailer. And so I was like, I'm going to read or listen to Dark Disciple to kind of remember that story the last time we saw her. And I'm enjoying it. Hopefully there's a new episode in about 4 hours. Maybe this will be the one that she comes back, and I don't think so. But check us out on Bounty Hunt if you want to hear our thoughts on that show. Otherwise, I'll talk
about
it too much.
Is that a Patreon-exclusive show? Isn't everyone?
Here, I'll hit you with the plug right now. That is not a Patreon-exclusive show. It drops same time for everyone, which should be Thursday mornings. It was this past, for the first week. So Oz, myself, JG, and a rotating cast of your Utini favorites will be talking about the Bounty Hunt, the good old Bad Batch, every week that comes out. So be tuned in for that on your podcast feeds. Yeah, it is same day for both patrons and everyone else on Thursdays. So there you go.
Caleb, maybe if you get caught up on the Bad Batch, you can join us.
Maybe.
I'm not yet caught up on Bad Batch, so maybe exactly. Next show that comes out. Maybe when we do the Acolyte. Isn't that coming out soon?
Acolyte will be hype. Yeah, Acolyte's supposed to be, the rumor is, I think, early June for Acolyte. And then Skeleton Crew's happening at some point. That is a little less certain, but, you know, hey.
Yeah, until we get a trailer, you know?
Even
then. Yeah.
Exactly. speaking of reading stuff, I'm on the opposite side since I'm not following up. I did read the first two issues of Marvel Superman or Spider-Man. That was pretty good, but I'm went through a bit of a DC kick. Well, a Superman kick because he's my favorite superhero. And I read Superman Smashes the Klan by Gene Luen Yang, and that was a really good little three mega series story arc. For those who don't know, in the 50s, I think it was, or no, it was in the late 40s. Superman, the radio show, was one of the most popular radio shows at the time, and they literally put a story arc where he fights a really paper-thin excuse of the Ku Klux Klan, and Superman beats up white supremacists and racists the entire series. It was
hell
interesting.
Yeah.
Based.
Yeah, it was really based in the 50s, and then recently they re-released that. They kind of went back and gave it to an author, Asian American, who redid it pretty much beat for beat, but just like expanded on it even more, and just like has Superman beating up the Nazis and white supremacists again, and it was really good.
Nice,
because it's fascinating because it's also set in the same time period of the original television shows. It's like, you know, Superman versus like the Nazi leftovers, and it's like, you know, they're running around in old, you know, Model T's and, you know, the 50s sort of Daily Planet and everything.
My favorite fun fact about the Superman radio show is that is where Kryptonite came from. If I recall correctly.
I think I've heard the story. Isn't it like the voice actor or something for Superman got sick, so they need, or like some conflict, so they need an excuse for Superman to be out there?
That may be. I don't know. That would be awesome if that's the reason. If they're like, we can't hold off recording, let's just make up a green rock.
Exactly, and just make him weak there. Like, it was also up to that point, I think it's the Max Fleischer series, about that same time, he was also like, hey, I know he can leap tall buildings in a single bound, but how about we just make him fly? That'd be a lot easier for us to animate if he can just, like, you know, fly.
Yeah, exactly.
But Superman Smashes the Klan is actually a really well-done sort of story, because it like superimposes, like, you know, Superman as like coming to terms with the fact that he's not a human, and also, you know, realize in helping like a young Asian American couple, like, realize that, you know, they look a little different from everyone, but they're still human. And it's like, hey, look, you're like, it's a fun like two stories about like being an alien in a different society and yet still finding acceptance and yet also appreciating who you are as a person.
Yeah. Okay. I did look up the Superman Kryptonite origin story that I just made up. Apparently there is an apocryphal story according to the Wikipedia article that it was to give the voice actor time to take a vacation. That was backed up in someone's memoir. However, a different historian says that was not the case. So Wikipedia says it is up in the air, but I think that is kind of hilarious.
It gets a Snopes, maybe true.
But yeah, moving on from what we've been reading, we have kind of news, kind of not. So every year for the Omnibus Collected Edition Faithful, Near Mint Condition puts out a poll for the your most wanted, the omnibuy you want to see printed for the first time the most. And this is like, I think it's an annual thing. And he has a very good connections with the Marvel editorial team. So I'm not saying putting these comics on there will get your thing printed, but it helps to show that there is a need and a market
desire
for these kinds of things. Yeah. So for the past several years, some Star Wars comics have reigned in at the top, including the back half of the 2015 Star Wars run, and we are finally getting that, I think, actually like in the next month or two. I posted on the Cosmic Force Twitter some that I would like to see, but I also love to get the take from Caleb and Oz, see what some of their favorite Marvel Star Wars comic options, or even maybe IDW or Dark Horse, to kind of give us a little bit more room to work with. The ones I suggested are Legacy, The Rest of Aphra, because we have 15 issues without it now.
Yes.
All of Bounty Hunters with maybe some nice additions of Solo Imperial Cadet, Target Vader. You could even throw in some of the story from Empire Ascendant. There's some options there. And then also Poe Dameron. Poe Dameron is top five
to be Poe
every single year. It is still crazy we don't have it. It's a very popular comic book, and it's only 29 issues, I think, plus like an annual or two. So It's a perfectly fine size, not too small, not like 60 issues for them to collect that. So, and also now you have the sort of small story that Charles Soule told in Star Wars 25 that you can throw in there as well.
That little capstone, yeah.
So yeah, it is the perfect comic for that. So Oz or Caleb, do you have any other suggestions for things you'd like to see in omnibus form for the first time?
Oof. I feel like you kind of hit the highlights there. Like, I don't know about it, Aphra Volume 3. I feel like there's not enough there. So, I don't know. Maybe we'll see what happens with the next, like, couple story arcs. Maybe that will be able to be, it'll be like, I don't know if they could, but they could do, like, a combination of that. Bounty Hunters makes sense. Of all these ones, I would buy the Poe Dameron, like, Omni. I would actually, like, physically buy the Poe Dameron Omni if I actually saw it. You know, like, all the other ones are good, but, like, it's, you know, Dameron's, you know, fun little stories there have been kind of slept on for so long. I feel like I would really want to have a physical edition there.
Yeah. It's funny. You're like, hey, what do y'all think after I named the most obvious ones?
Yep. That's why I got in there quick. So now it's up to you guys to.
But yeah, Poe, I mean, Poe's perfect because unlike Aphra or Bounty Hunters, like, it's just fully its own story. Now, technically, the last arc does shoot right into Resistance Reborn, if you're a sicko and you really want to see the conclusion of that. But it's just such a good story on its own. I think Marvel-wise, I'm pretty good. I'm not always an Omni collector. What I would love to see is all the Tales of Vader's Castle IDW series collected. I mean, all the IDW stuff that hasn't been collected, I would like to come out at some point, the Adventures stuff. But I really like those Vader's Castle issues, and they would make a perfect omnibus. So Dark Horse, if you're listening, do what you did with the Rebels comics, and you can put a scary Vader on the cover. That's going to sell. I mean, It's come on. Give it to me.
Yeah, because IDW had put out a hardcover collection of it at one point, but then they produced more comics, so those aren't collected anywhere. So
right,
yeah,
it was just the first two arcs they did.
Volume would be great.
Oh, I just saw something. You might have to wait a couple of years. Is the Yoda miniseries? I feel like that'd be a good kind of one to get like in an omni. But we're doing the Mace Windu right now, so maybe that would be like a Jedi Masters of the Old Republic.
You could go back to like the like oversized, just like the regular oversized hardcover kind of format that like they've done for, like, I know Captain Phasma, like a mini series, and that had
those
treatment.
what was it called? Heroes of the Rebellion. They had the Princess Leia, the Chewie, and the Han Solo minis from
and Lando.
Lando, yes.
Lando, yeah. So something like that. But yeah, I mean, that's Yoda would be perfect for it. Or yeah, like Caleb, like you were saying, there's been two Mace stories. Yoda, I mean, you could do something really weird and like throw in the Jango and Darth Maul red, white, and black, white, and red. I can never remember what it is.
Right.
Sort of a pre-Phantom Menace thing. I don't know. But I mean, just give us Soul's, what's it called? Poe Dameron.
Right. Yeah. And like,
Poe Dameron.
I think I don't know that any of us has a good solution to it, but I think we definitely need more of the 2020 stuff collected. Obviously, Star Wars and Darth Vader isn't done yet. You know, we've talked about Bounty Hunters and Dr. Aphra already. We have the interesting scenario of what to do with all the events because they have collected War of the Bounty Hunters so far, and it has all the main issues and all the tie-ins from all the different runs. Mm-hmm. So then do you do a Crimson Rain? Do you do an individual Crimson Rain one, then do a Hidden Empire and then a Dark Droids? Well, then what's left over? Like, are you going to have overlaps with all the individual runs with them getting their own volumes? Like Crimson Rain is not so much a full crossover as it is with with War of the Bounty Hunters. So like, does it even make sense to collect?
I wouldn't think so.
The ongoings in there. It's like, I don't know that there's a nice solution that makes sense and doesn't require you to buy stuff multiple times if you want everything.
Yeah. And there's really no way to put it all in one book and have it sort of make sense as a story.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think it just comes back to what were they thinking with the Aphra situation. But if we go back down that road, Oz and I will be yelling for the next 20 minutes, and I don't know if we can have that. So, yeah, there's hopefully some good omnibus selections. I have a lot more hope that Poe Dameron will eventually come to omnibus form after Star Wars Volume 2, or however you want to call it, finally got collected. So, you know, hopefully as Star Wars fans get a little more help from Poe Dameron. And then, yeah, I think Legacy probably will come pretty soon now that they've done Tales of the Jedi is coming out. Mm-hmm. They've done KOTOR, like a lot of these longer form runs that you can't intermix with all of the miniseries that they're doing with like Empire and Rise of the the Menace, whatever the thing they're calling the series. It's something Rise like, Menacey. Those
honestly,
make
I am,
sense to have
I'm
one volume.
I'm surprised that Legacy hasn't been collected in an Omni already. Like, I would have thought that would have been taken care of, like, you know, 10 years ago, 5 years ago.
Well, yeah. I think, again, Tales of the Jedi, I don't know if Legends fans, Tales of the Jedi is more popular than Legacy. I think people like to talk about Legacy more than they like to. It's just, you know, the my computer background is like Darth Talon or whatever kind of shit. I don't know that they read it as much, but I would think Tales of the Jedi might be more popular. We're just now getting that. So,
well, that said, you know, we're not editors here. We're just podcasters.
That's true. We have some amount of disposable income. I'm sure Jared will yell at me in Discord when he finds out my Legends comics take, but hey, that's fine. We have some canon comics to talk about. And that is, again, Thrawn Alliances, the first two issues, kind of. These are written by Timothy Zahn and Jody Hauser, with pencils from Pat Olife and Andrea DeVito, with colors from Rochelle Rosenberg. So, Caleb, what's going on with our boy Thrawn and Anakin / Darth Vader?
They're retelling the plot of Thrawn Alliances, so it's been a hot minute since I reread the first issue / the book itself, but in the first issue, we're kind of getting a lot of setup of Vader and Thrawn are being, you know, paired up to go investigate something that the Emperor, a disturbance that the Emperor has sensed, and they go to Disney World, Batuu, the Black Spire Outpost. And while there, Thrawn reminisces that he was here with a Jedi Knight, you know, many, many years ago, one known as Anakin Skywalker. So we kind of have like a dual narrative here of the first time Anakin and Thrawn met and they're going on a mission to rescue Padme because it's the Clone Wars and that's all that Anakin did during that war. And then we also have a story with Thrawn and Vader also doing an inspection and trying to kind of track down what this disturbance is. So in this issue too, we got to start with a pretty massive action scene where Vader and Thrawn are being attacked by a couple of not Grisks, but their cohort race, as they're being overwhelmed by a new weapon, a kind of sentient swarm that overwhelms and concretes and then solidifies over their prey. Meanwhile, in the past, Anakin is tracking down with some help of Thrawn and using a weird kind of morbid force dead body puppet to track down some smugglers who might have known where Padme wound up at. So we end the issue with Vader breaking out and killing his attackers, as he always does, and taking some prisoners. And then Anakin is beginning, finally has a good lead on Padme, as him and Thrawn begin to do some old-fashioned pacing and detective work to find a planet where Padme will be crash-landing.
Yeah, that's right. That's a lot.
It's a lot. And it's only two issues.
I don't know. Do we want to start with that, or do we want to save that discussion for later?
Yeah. Well, let's back up a little.
Yeah. Let's hit some of the highlights.
Yeah, some of the highlights. So, I did love from this book and from both the book and the comic of how catty Thrawn is kind of being to Vader. And it's like,
yeah,
you know, hey, remember the last time we were here? We were never here. Oh, yeah, sorry, I forgot. I was with Anakin Skywalker, a completely different person.
Yeah, their interactions were really good. I feel like one thing that can hold back a Vader comic for me is Vader having too much dialogue, and that's sort of the one thing that through this, I don't think there's any way around it, because in the movies you can just have him do little one-liners, but that doesn't work when he's the focus. So I don't love all of Vader's dialogue, but Thrawn makes up for it just with how that plays out. And there's so many times where Thrawn says something, Vader's like, no, that's not true. And Thrawn's just like, yeah, I already knew that, but here's why it is true. I mean, that's Thrawn's whole thing, right? He's thinking ahead.
I think it's a very interesting dynamic where, like, in so many of Thrawn's stories throughout, like, the past 40 years or 30 years now at this point, he has, like, a protege, and it has, like, a very, like, Sherlock and, like, Watson kind of feel to it.
Exactly.
But the Watson is always kind of the samey. You got Eli Vanto, you got Pelion, you got, like, all these characters that kind of fit a very similar mold.
Like, at least smart enough to be a... Yeah, they're smart enough to be around him, but they always have to have everything explained to them so us, the audience, can play along.
Right. But it's interesting because Vader and Thrawn sort of have this dynamic, but Vader is obviously, and Anakin, are obviously very different than very different than Eli Vanto, very different than Pelion. So, like, it's kind of an interesting twist on that sort of dynamic.
Yeah. Exactly. It's like, Thrawn is now no longer the person in ultimate control. Like, Vader has, like, the authority over Thrawn there.
Yeah, although I loved that bit where Vader's like, don't ignore an order from me, and Thrawn's like, actually, I control the Chimera. And Vader's like, okay, we'll talk about this later.
Right.
So they've got a interesting power struggle. And obviously, Thrawn is, like, playing by the book technically, but totally pushing Vader's buttons.
And we will definitely see, I mean, not to spoil too much, a book that came out 7 years ago or whatever, but we will definitely see more buttons pushed as we get further into the story.
Okay. Which, speaking of the book that came out 7 years ago, have y'all both read the book? Have we all read it?
It's been years, but yes.
Like, yeah. 2 years ago, year and a half ago, I think, yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, I was looking up the timeline, not like the Star Wars timeline, like the real world timeline of all this. And the first Canon Thrawn book came out in 2017. That book got adapted into a comic before Alliances even came out.
Yeah.
And then a few months later, Alliances came out. And then here we are, it took 6 years to get this comic. So it's sort of weird that this even exists, if we're being honest.
Mm-hmm. I don't know that this exists if the Ahsoka show didn't bring him into live action.
Yeah, and so I...
Exactly.
You know, I wonder...
Trying to capitalize on some hype, which, you know, Thrawn hype is always, you know, good hype.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I wonder if they'll if there will be another long gap, or if they'll just, like, right after this, jump into Treason.
Right. I mean, with Ahsoka 2 kind of in, I think it's in pre-production right now, you know, maybe they're going to try and line that up where the Treason adaptation is coming out close to that now.
Right. In fact, let's go back to our previous discussion, and maybe that's the next Omni, is all three of these.
I've thought about that, yeah.
And they'll also maybe do an Ascendancy, and so then, boom, that's, you know, 30 issues right there.
Yeah. I mean, my other Omni prediction that I don't want is just all of the TV show adaptations of the Mandoverse in one hardcover.
Yeah, we forgot to mention that.
I kind of have it in my mind. I want to collect the canon Omnis past 2020. I don't know that I will be able to stomach that one. But
yeah, justify, yeah, like, spending $80 for a comic series that you can't even buy the DVD of.
They're fixing that.
For some of them. So on the subject of the book, I will admit I am not a big fan of the original novel of this book. Mm-hmm. I loved Thrawn 2017. I thought this one was a big bummer. For a whole host of reasons that honestly I don't entirely remember anymore, because it's been several years. I just remember this book not catching my attention, so I wasn't super excited for the comic. I'm actually kind of digging it. It's weird though. I'm sort of reading it like a read a Wikipedia page, because right, it's reminding me of things I already know. But it's I don't know. It's cool to see. It's just odd that, I mean, they never do this for books. This is only two books they've done under Marvel. And if you're a sicko, there were a couple under IDW, Weapon of a Jedi and Smuggler's Run. But I would like to see this done with some other books that I do like more.
Right.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if I want to see, like, every single book get a comic adaptation, but this one is definitely, like, I'm not sure if the comic adaptation adds a ton to this, like, to this retelling of the story or this version of the story. It is really good. One thing I do remember is I did like, I think, Thrawn Alliance is a lot more than a lot of people, but this is going to be on me being smeg on my face. I kind of forgot about the Vader and Thrawn, like, it part of the whole story. like I only, like, ever remember having good times with the Anakin Thrawn side and, like, kind of like the cool, fun Clone Warsy action that they got up to, and I really, really enjoyed that. Like, the Vader and Thrawn stuff, I think, kind of went in one earlobe and went out the other one.
Caleb, you realize that Darth Vader is on the cover of the book, right?
Okay, yes. Maybe. Yes. But I was doing the audiobook, so I wasn't, like, picking up every day and doing that.
He could have the version of it.
I don't know how the convention exclusive cover. The timing works down. Like, you know, I'm sure someone's gone through and, like, figured out, like, what percentage is in the past and what percentage is in the future. You know, that sounds like a Trev question there. But, I mean, it's, like, I enjoyed the book a lot, but when I'm going back through this, I'm like, oh yeah, there were some, you know, kind of interesting things. I do like the Vader dynamic. You know, this issue specifically ping-ponged and went back and forth between the two timelines a lot. Like I think we have, like, a perspective shift, like, five times in this arc here, in this one story itself. On one.
To... You can count. Well,
yeah,
yeah. There's one place where it cuts back and forth, like three straight pages where like it's intersplicing fight scenes. And now I'm reading it digitally, so maybe that's a left right page thing, and that could maybe work well in a physical comic, but it was sort of jarring as a scroll situation. I don't know.
Yeah, one thing I will say on the fight scene front that I really enjoyed, I noticed it, like, right before we started recording, was an element in this book is that Vader/Anakin has, like, force precognition when he's fighting and, like, can see moves before they happen. There's, like, a specific word that they use.
Double vision.
Double vision, yeah, is what they say in the book when it's happening. But, like, one of the panels, you see these aliens kind of rushing at him, and there's, like, a grayed out version of where they're going to be, so kind of showing that double vision of right before he can predict where they're coming. And of course, I mean, I don't blame them. The artist does straight up take those, like, grayed out previews and then just copy paste them into the next panel, because that's what's going to happen. I mean, it's part of the effect, but I also think it's, you know, hey, one less thing I have to draw. So
it's clever use of resources. And yeah, they did a really good job with that. And I just counted there are set, like, it swaps between past and present 7 times throughout this, like, 21-page, 24-page comic here.
Yeah, it's a little longer than that. I think it's like 32 maybe pages.
It is not
28 pages. So, but still, that's very frequent.
It is very frequent. Yeah. So the artist did do a lot of good work here. I think they have like 2 different artists for the past and the present, and that's a really good choice.
Oh yeah, you're right. Man. I didn't even notice there were 2 names on the cover. That makes sense looking at that, because yeah, it definitely has a different look on both sides. Yeah, there's a lot of good art stuff. I liked all of Vader's visions of whatever this disturbance is. All these kind of screaming faces, very classic tortured Vader. And there's a lot of action here, a lot of hand-to-hand combat, which can be tough to do with drawings because there's not a lot of motion. But it's really cool. There's a great panel where Vader pulls down someone's hand and makes him shoot the ground. That was the highlight of the fight for me. It would look cool in motion, but
yeah,
this is a comic book.
One thing that, you know, Timothy Zahn as a writer is he's very detailed and technical. Like, you know, he loves writing like technical details and putting a lot of that into his books. And, you know, the artists have done a really good job of, you know, showing his like details here. Like there's a scene where Thrawn and Vader are being attacked in the present with like the swarm that kind of concretes around them, and just in a couple pages the artist shows how Vader like rips apart his own cloak and like uses it to create like a barrier around himself so that he can still have like freedom of movement within his arm when he gets pinned and concreted over.
Yes.
So you know, it shows, you know, the aliens decloaking, and so it shows that they have cloaking fields that they can drop it here. So like the artists are doing a lot of like heavy lifting so that, you know, there's not, they don't have to have the, you know, paragraphs upon paragraphs of Zahn's, you know, technical descriptions here.
Yeah, I loved the panel of them in concrete was so funny to me just because they're, you know, just standing there covered in concrete, but I don't know how else you could do that. Right. Speaking of Timothy Zahn, we didn't even mention, it's worth noting, I mean, I know you mentioned the credits, but unlike the first adaptation, he is credited as a writer on this. So at least from, you know, interviews, and maybe it's lip service, I don't know, but Jody Houser said that the two of them collaborated on this, and I think there's supposed to be maybe some new scenes in it. I'm not familiar enough with the book to know if there's any changes. I could be misremembering what I read months ago. It's just interesting that Zahn is an active writer in this and not just the guy who wrote the book.
Yeah.
Or at least somewhat active. I mean, well, who knows how much it really is.
Yeah, that's always kind of a question I have when, like, especially when the Star Wars has, like, manga adaptations of a book. It's like, well, did you actually, did the writer of the original novel actually contribute on this, or is this kind of just, you know, they're getting credit because it's an adaptation of what they did before?
Yeah, which also makes sense, and that's probably what I would think if Zahn had been credited the first time. I don't think this is just them, like, fixing a legal mistake, but maybe, who knows?
Right. One other, I think, just, like, super interesting thing in this book is... Well, I mean, it was in the novel as well. The meat puppet, which Caleb kind of mentioned in his recap. I think we should give a little more time to this, because in the Clone Wars timeline, there's like they wake up from like an ambush, and they're trying to like fool. They think someone else from the, you know, the team after them is spying on them, so they take a body and have Anakin force manipulate it to like act like it's still alive, and he like handcuffs it and puts it on the wing of his ship, which I remember reading that in the book and be like, that is bizarre, and seeing it drawn out, it's still bizarre.
It's really weird. It's like, oh, that's like, these Jedi starfighters were not made for passengers, were they?
Really didn't understand the point of putting him on the ship. I'm sure it was mentioned, fleshed out a little more in the book. But the whole Weekend at Bernie's thing was cracking me up.
Yeah.
Because he's just like, He's like, I can make him look convincing, but I can't move the muscles under his skin. And I think, though, that speaks to one of the issues with, no pun intended, with this comic, is that, like, it's got a lot to get through. And so it just has to breeze through a whole bunch of the smaller scenes. And so whereas in the comic, it might be like, I'm putting him on my ship for, or in the book for what, for whatever reason.
The reason is like he's trying to make it like we think the bad guys out there don't want this guy to like talk to.
Yeah, that I got.
So it's luring them out. But it, yeah, it's just kind of we're rushing through it a little bit. Honestly, the premise, I'm sorry, Timothy's on, a little strange to just have the dude sitting on the side of the wing. I know like physically there's no other option, but anyways.
Yeah.
And, you know, as we, you mentioned, this is halfway through the series now. We're only getting four issues of this.
Yeah, the last one, I think the first one was five. Which,
six.
Oh, it was, yeah, even longer. And I think that, the first one was a bigger book. That one and Trees are a little chunky. But yeah, four issues is curious, especially because there's two storylines, so it's tougher to cut stuff when like they're both are pretty important. And even the little I remember about the book, I'm like, there's a fair amount of stuff to go, because in what I assume will be the next issue or maybe the finale, it'll be one of those two, there's a whole like droid foundry action sequence, which
is
my favorite part of the book.
Yeah, you'd have to think that they are already off Mokeev at the end of issue three. That's like probably the like last panel is them leaving, which that's a lot of ground to cover just with the Clone Wars side of things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe that next issue will be nothing but Clone Wars, and then one after that will be like the wrap up in the real time here.
Yeah, and so it's sort of curious. I know I liked the action in comic books, you know, they need good action. But it was a lot of time, a lot of pages spent on a bar fight, which was probably one chapter in the book, and now it made up like 30% of the whole comic.
Yeah.
Yeah. As I said, the pacing seems to be like the reverse mullet here. It's like we got a lot of party up front, but in like the last two episodes are going to have to be nothing but business, man. Like paragraphs of text here.
Yeah.
And, Marvel, can we get a quote on the trade paperback? This comic is paced like a mullet. Reverse mullet. Thank you.
Yeah, okay. I don't know. I'm wondering, like, yeah, with just like the bar fight scenes, if like some sort of like dynamic, creative, like panel layout could have, like, if you know, like having like instead of just like white lines, having like be like the characters in action being part of the transition. Like trying to just having more information density on a page could have helped, but yeah, it's just I think the end of the day, this needed to be more than four issues, and we are really feeling that right now.
All right, now I know this is going to be kind of completely off topic, but yeah, you know, we were talking about how we might finally get the Grisks in on page here, and I pulled it up here, and according to Wikipedia. They see that the Yuuzhan Vong and the Grisks are the same race.
I don't know where they're getting that, but that's ridiculous.
I know, that's ridiculous. Like, but if you look it up here, I'll post it in the Slack here. But it says, you know, Yuuzhan Vong / Grisk, you know, canon. After it was acquired, you know, eventually you've a canonical version of the Yuuzhan Vong, now known as the Grisk, were introduced in Thrawn Alliances.
No,
you know.
I know, it's like, I don't think, there's like, I don't see any, like, you know, link here, so I don't see where they're getting any of this information at all, but it's like, what? That, like, where are you getting this? Caleb, I didn't get that at all.
Hold on.
There you go.
Yeah. Maybe they just mean, like, this was used sort of in place of the Vong, and not, like, they're the actual Vong? I don't know, that is very curious.
Yeah, that's strange.
Like, there's no linking, like, articles or, like, you know, anything like that that's saying that, oh, the Grisks are actually the Yuuzhan Vong. But, like, so when I saw this, like, wait, what? Did I miss something?
It's also funny that on that article, the Grisk has a bigger section than the Yuuzhan Vong.
Yeah.
Considering they've been in, what, four books total. I don't even know if they were in all three Ascendancy books.
They kind of, I mean, they were mostly in two of them. In one of them, they were in the epilogue. But yeah, you didn't know it was them. So
They were like a real power behind the scenes, which is not I've read any of the New Jedi Order or wherever they came in from, but I thought the whole point of that Devong is like they just came in with these giant world ships and used like straight up like warfare and, you know, attacks and not, you know.
I think there might be some behind us some surface level thematic similarities of outside the kind of, and I mean, the Grisks are from inside the galaxy, but still like outside the core. Mm-hmm. Threat that is unknown and yada yada yada, but yeah, that's that Wikipedia page is on crack. I don't know,
people seem to have really strong reactions about the Grisk, and it's, I feel like it's been an ongoing meme for a while, and I just straight up don't understand it, because I think the Grisk were one of those proper nouns in a book that just sort of like flew past me, and I made like I have no mental relationship with the Grisk despite having read all these books. So when people are getting all worked up about it, I'm like, I don't know why. So people are really excited or terrified to see them on page finally.
I'm going to be like shooketh.
They will not. They're like described as like gray, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, but you know, according to Wikipedia, they both have skull-like faces and sloping foreheads.
Caleb.
Just keep in mind, we still don't know what Bothans look like, so we might not get to see Grisk either. no, I mean, there's no way to finish this without it. Unfortunately, we got to talk real quick about something terrible about issue one, is that they cut the best scene from the book. Well,
The scene was there.
It's if you haven't read the book. In the scene where Clone Wars Anakin and Thrawn meet in space, and Anakin switches to the Mees Koff trade language so they can understand each other, Thrawn introduces himself as Mithrani Rodo. I think I'm pretty close on that.
We'll see what he says.
Yeah, exactly. Anakin says it back to him, but like there's like a whole two paragraph exchange of like, you're saying my name wrong. And that is worth checking out the audiobook alone, because I think it's Mark Thompson who did it.
Yeah, I think it's Mark Thompson.
He has a lot of fun with it, and it just would have been such an absurd series of panels in the comic, but totally worth it.
They posted a preview of this without lettering, and I straight up thought, I'm like, that is the page. I could tell. It's like two ships in orbit. Like I like mapped it out where the bubbles would be, and no, they didn't do it.
Yeah, it was a bummer. They I get it.
Much of a coward.
Yeah, so Jody Hauser, I'm sure you fought for that scene, but it maybe just had to get cut for page length, and that's a bummer.
One of my other favorite things, I think, from issue one, well, not so much issue one specifically, but again, harkening back to the book and when this was written, is I think it was Queen's Peril, it was either Queen's Shadow or Queen's Peril, where they're like, we're going to definitively establish that adding the A to the end of your name is something, I think it was Shadow. Or no, it was Peril, because it was when they were all getting recruited. It was like, we're adding the A to your end of your name, like Padme, Versailles, Sabe, all that is like a tribute we're doing to our queen. And we're all of the handmaidens throughout time are always going to do the A on the end of her name. And then we got in this book, Duja. So I don't know how that happened. I think, this book I think came out before Queen's Peril. But it's just kind of a funny artifact of when these books were written. I kind of was curious if they were going to just retcon it in the comic, but they decided to keep it as is. So,
I think there's one other handmaiden from like a Forces of Destiny short.
I would believe that.
Who also doesn't have it. But yeah, when I read that comic and I was like, Duja, oh yeah, that's right. She doesn't get the special thing. They could have at least like given her an accent on the A, like she just didn't really understand the assignment.
Right.
But it does stand out. That whole part of the book was, or of the comic was, kind of confusing too, because they really blast through that intro that Padme is coming to Batu because of her handmaiden. It's just sort of like she was there and she's dead and on display for the public for some reason, and now we're moving on.
Yep. Still, it's a fascinating comic. Like, pick it up if you haven't read the book yet, and you're not a book person, but a comic person, it's like hopefully it sticks landing, and you know, it's not too confusing for first timers through, but I think it's interesting. Glad to see some more adaptations, you know. It's always interesting to see that happen.
Yeah, so, I guess, like, what are your all's, like, I guess, top three, like, right now, if you had to, for, I'm giving you a book, you're not picking series, nothing like that. What is your, like,
top three
books you would want to see adapted?
Dark Disciple, easy.
Okay.
That'd be an easy one.
I was just going to say Alphabet Squadron, that's three.
I'll give you that. If you want to use Alphabet Squadron, I'll let that happen.
Damn, that's a good one there. All right, well, I did one. Give me some time to come back. Jacob, what about you?
I think Shadows of the Sith would be very interesting. There's a lot of, like, cool, like, set piece kind of action, and you have your, like, Sith flashbacks and all that stuff. I think it would make for a good visual adaptation.
That could be good. I would like to see Han Solo Last Shot. Mm. That would be, with the three different timelines they have going on there, I feel like that would be a good one to do as well.
Yeah, I know that you said all three of mine go to Alphabet Squadron, but I don't care about your rules. And I'm going to add, I forgot for a second, but Rise of the Red Blade.
Good one.
It would tie in really well with Charles Soule's Vader, because that's where Iscot came from, sort of. And in fact, the show that's in the epilogue of that book is the scene from Vader.
I'm going to go a little out there for my next one. I would like a sort of IDW Dark Horse treatment of the George Mann, like, Myths and Fables, Dark Legends books. So you can have, like, little snippets of all the stories and have, like, a A story, B story, instead of, like, a full issue for each one.
Yeah,
that'd be fun.
Okay. Well, if we're doing something wild like that, for my last one, I'll pick From a Certain Point of View. It's such a perfect one. Now that we have, like, 50 different, like, you know, or 20 different stories, we can have 40 different artists across, like, six issues.
Give them 8 pages each would be 320 pages. That'd be roughly 16 issues. So you could do that over a year.
Yeah.
I'm into it. Someone get Marvel Editorial on the phone for, I guess, we're in the 25th of Phantom Menace. Let's do it for Phantom Menace. I know that's not an adaptation anymore. Now that's just new comics.
Right.
Man, that would be worth it just to talk with Jacob about MSC 6 and Men.
Oh, God. As long as I don't have to listen to it, I think that's the worst part of it.
I'm picturing exactly how it would work in a comic, and I would kind of love it. Because it would be, like, just black text boxes.
It would be fascinating.
With code written in it.
Yeah. All right. I think I got one more.
Okay.
Shoot. I feel like a lot of the good options are taken. I guess if Oz got to do a full trilogy, I guess I'm also going to break my own rules. I think Aftermath, just to kind of see what happens with, like, the Battle of Jakku visually, would be sick.
Yeah, and then there's a crossover with the third Alphabet Squadron. So
there you go.
Aftermath, I think, would really be served well by a comic treatment, because I think the biggest issue people had with that book was the prose, and especially the present tense narration, which would be possibly gone from a comic. I know you can do comics in that way. But I like those books well enough.
Yeah.
I almost said Lost Stars, then I remember we got a manga of it, and it's good.
Right. Well,
I think
Did you have one more?
I do technically have one more, but I don't know what. I mean, I guess Brotherhood is another recent favorite. I don't think that doesn't need a comic, but I just really like
Master and Apprentice.
Yeah, maybe Master and Apprentice. I'd like to see some Rael Avaros content.
Yeah. Well, hey, if you do Brotherhood, you could have the crossover issue with Rise of the Red Blade, so that'd be pretty cool.
Oh, right, with the knighting ceremony.
Yeah. But, well, we're going to kind of wrap our discussion down to an end for this week. There are no other comic books for us to hit that came out this week. It was just Thrawn Alliances. But for next week, we have two great options to discuss. We have both Star Wars number 44, which is the start of the trial of Lando Calrissian. Will he be sentenced to death, or will he just become a general by the end and going into Return of the Jedi? No way of knowing. We'll have to stay tuned. And then the other issue coming out is High Republic number 4, as Keeve is entering the occlusion zone, the OZ. So I'm sure there'll be some great issues there next week. But hey, that'll do it for this week's episode of the Cosmic Force. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and leave a review. You can follow us on Twitter and tweet at the show at Cosmic Force Show. You can follow the host as well. I'm at Jacob Bausch. Caleb's at Caleb Laminack. And Oz actually liked a tweet from the podcast account while we were recording this this episode. So I saw that.
Because you mentioned
for
me.
Reviews and guides for the rest of the wide galaxy of Star Wars content, be sure to visit utini.com. We encourage you to join our Utini Discord community by going to utini.com/discord. And you can also help support the show by heading over to patreon.com/utini with exclusive perks starting at just $5 a month. Special thank you to Brian Dooley, Carl Sander, Michael Fry, and Raymond Bazinski on our Jedi High Council, as well as James T., Ashley Ingalls, Colton Fife, Chris Carrizo, and Sally and Chris Eilerson on our Alliance High Command for all of their amazing support. Thanks again, Caleb and Oz, for hosting with me, and thank you all for the listeners for joining us this week. We really appreciate everything you do. See you all next week, and may the Force be with you.